Is he my prince? Is he the toad? Waiting, wondering, is getting too old. I'm gonna let down my hair, slide up my skirt. Welcome to the Shame-Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
This is Veronica Monet. This is the Shame-Free Zone. I'm glad you tuned in. I'm just getting to know a woman by the name of Micaiah Hart, and I'm really enjoying her approach. Now, she's not actually, you know, as much as we have sexologists and experts on here, and she's written books about a lot of different topics, including shamanism, and I think that actually gives her a unique perspective on the topic of sex. We're certainly going to find out over the next hour. But Micaiah Hart wrote a book. It's through Clias Press, actually, which is a great feminist press. The book is called The Ultimate Guide to Orgasm for Women. Now, what I find really exciting about her approach is that she believes, as do I, that sex is one of the easiest ways to learn how to let universal energy flow through your body, and that's an essential aspect of being alive. So I'm just really excited about that, and I'm looking at the cover of her book here. She's got a foreword with Violet Blue. Violet Blue is one of the preeminent experts, author of The Ultimate Guide to Cunnilingus, and wow, I can't imagine a better book blurb then. This book changed everything for me, my orgasms, my relationship with sex, my relationship with my orgasms, and how I share them or not with other people. So that's what a sex expert had to say about this new book. Micaiah Hart, welcome to the Shame-Free Zone.
Hi, Veronica. I'm very happy to be on the show.
Glad to have you here. Very much so. So you've also got a blurb from an old friend of mine. I say old only because Betty Dodson and I probably haven't. Well, I think we have talked in recent history, actually, because I was trying to get her to host her own TV show or own radio show. Yeah. But she was too busy. She's launched this brand new fabulous website. But Betty Dodson and I met about 25 years ago in San Francisco when we were first rebirthing Coyote, which is Call Off Your Old Tired Ethics. Anyway, she's also put a great blurb on your book. She says, The Ultimate Guide to Orgasm for Women will help women to release old taboos and fears so they can embrace sexual confidence and enjoy a fuller sex life. A must read for any woman who wants to expand her vocabulary of sex. And then that's not enough. So you got Tristan Taramino, too, author of The Ultimate Guide to Anal Sex for Women. Tristan Taramino and I both were speaking at Oregon State University last year. She gave a keynote. It was a huge controversy. Anyway, but her blurb for your book says, thoughtful and thorough, packed with great information, the voices of real women talking honestly about their sexuality. And actually, that is something I've marked a page here that I want to go to about women's comments about their G-spot. fascinating book. But can you just back us up a little bit here and tell us about this journey that you took from shamanism to sex?
Uh-huh. Well, I don't know that it quite happened from shamanism to sex or from sex to shamanism, actually.
But
at some point in my life, let's start a little further back here. I was molested as a kid, and I always, because of that, I really had very first-hand experience from being a young child of how powerful sex is. And I remember very vividly promising myself that I would never have sex when I got old enough, that it was evil and bad. And then, of course, I started having sex with boys and consensual sex rather than molest.
Sure.
And,
that's what we
and,
do.
And then I started having sex with women, and it was all really wonderful. But there was some lingering part of me that remembered, you know, well, remembered the molest. So anyway, in my 30s, I started really doing some healing work around that. And I discovered that sex is an incredibly powerful healing force. You know, it can be used to harm people and damage people, but it is also just, it's sex is amazing. I mean, what else do we do that starts with the body and then takes us to this incredible place of bliss that is far beyond the body? You know, it's just, it's an amazing thing. And what the body does, what occurs in the body, is really astounding. I mean, there have been experiments done proving that people don't feel any pain. You know, they may be in chronic pain or even acute pain, but they don't feel it when they're having an orgasm. I mean, that's really incredible, you know. It's really an amazing thing. So anyway, at the same time in the 80s and 90s, I was studying various shamanic practices, and I came to realize that sex is a very, it's a very shamanic practice. It's a very shamanic thing to do because it's about working with energy. And not only is it a really, really fun and wonderful thing to do just all on its own, but it also can really help us to learn how to work and play with energy. And that can really expand our lives on a, you know, our daily lives on a daily basis, because we learn, because everything is energy, you know. Physics taught us that. Everything is energy. So learning to work with energy is about learning to work with everything. And actually, I prefer to say the word play, play with energy, because really it's,
yes.
it's a play, and it's a delightful play. It's an exciting and wonderful play.
So would you say that it was kind of your journey around sexual healing that actually sent you down the road of investigating sex?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it was my sexual healing. Well, you know, it's difficult. How do we define that word, healing? I feel like I had been, what you might say, damaged sexually as a child, and I had to address that through sex. And in the process of addressing it, I mean, I had already discovered that sex was wonderful, but in the process of addressing it, I really began to understand that this was, I was playing with a source of power that is truly remarkable. And one of the extraordinary things, of course, is that, you know, there are really two taboo subjects in Western society, and they are sex and death. And people will tell you that sex is not a taboo subject, but actually it is taboo. There are very, very few people who talk truthfully about sex. And there are still an awful lot of people who are very careful not to talk truthfully about sex. Because it's so powerful, they're actually afraid of it. They're afraid of getting real with it. And this would be a different world if more people, and particularly men, I think, were able to talk really honestly about their fears and, well, about their fears around sex.
I think it would be a very different world, too. What do you think? What do you envision would be a big difference in the world if we were not shame-based around sex?
Well, we would start being able to play with it in much, much deeper and more truthful, more real ways. So I think at the moment what happens is, you know, a couple get together. Say, a man and a woman get together. And, you know, they've both been taught from when they were very young that they should know how to do sex, and there's something wrong with them if they don't enjoy it. And, of course, with women, that's a real double-edged sword, because they're also taught, I mean, it's less true now, but it is still true to some extent, they're also taught that there's something wrong with them if they do enjoy sex. But they're certainly taught there's something wrong with them if they don't enjoy sex. And because of that basic fear that there's something wrong with us, you know, we're afraid to talk about it. And so you know, we think we ought to know how to do it, and we think we're meant to have orgasms, and we think we're meant to enjoy this, you know, this particular way of doing it. And some people, I mean, people are different, you know, people are incredibly different, and there are a million different ways to have sex. And there's, you know, most of us think we're brought up thinking there's this standard way of having sex, and that's what you're supposed to enjoy. And again, once again, there's something wrong with you if you don't. So I just think it would open an incredible number of doors if people started talking in a real way, and people would start having much more fun with sex and just expanding their sexual repertoire enormously and getting to depths of ecstasy that they are not able to reach at the moment because they're not able to talk about what they really want. They're often not even able to admit it to themselves, much less to anyone else. And they can't really talk to their partner. So intimate relationships would be really intimate if people really talked about sex. And right now, most of what other people experience as, you know, they consider an intimate relationship, in my opinion, usually are not, because there's so frequently somebody is not saying, well, both partners are not saying what they really would like to say. They're not saying, they're not telling the truth. So.
Well, absolutely, and it's amazing. People, they're sharing beds and bodily fluids, but they can't share feelings and opinions or conversation or words. That, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've talked to couples and say, well, have you asked your partner if that's working for them or if they like this or if they'd rather do something else? It's like, no, 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 no.
I mean, it's hard to understand, and yet when I look at the way we're brought up, of course, that's the way we are. And you know, it would also, if men started being real with each other, they wouldn't be able to be so competitive and hierarchical with each other, and that's what would really change the world. And sex is probably one of the biggest areas where men are afraid of telling the truth to each other. You know, they've got to play macho. You know, this society runs on men doing that. And if men stopped doing that and started telling the truth, it'd be a different thing.
But women are also not telling the truth. They're faking orgasms.
Yes.
So, and you talk about that in your book. What is that about? A lot of women, I talk to so many women, it's like, oh, yeah, I faked an orgasm. And I think, why would you do that for free? That always just
why would you do that with somebody that you want to be intimate with? I mean, that's what I can't understand. Can't you see that you are destroying any possibility of being truly intimate with someone if you lie to them about something so basic?
Well, not only that, but you're destroying any opportunity you might have to actually wind up enjoying sex at some point.
Yeah.
Because now you've turned it into a facade. It's just a performance.
Yes. A performance, exactly. Yeah. And it's so interesting that that word performance is used to describe sex in a standard way. I mean, you know, a man's got to perform. I mean, what an awful thing to tell someone, you know. That's what a basis for having fun. You can't have fun if you're terrified that you're not going to be able to perform.
So what do you think what do you think it is that drives women to be dishonest about their orgasms?
Well, I think it's that they're afraid that there's something wrong with them. It's very often that. But I think also standard sex, a lot of women just are not going to have orgasms with standard sex. I mean, studies have been done that prove that only about 30%, that's probably a very high estimate, only about 30% of women come from intercourse. And yet, I think a lot of men still believe that if they're doing it right, and of course they all want to do it right, even though there's no such thing, that she'll come during intercourse, and that is simply untrue. So you're all, you know, what's he going to do? Keep pumping away until she either fakes it or says, hey, this isn't working for me, or you know, maybe she does. Maybe, some women do actually come that way. But, you know, what's really got to happen is women have got it. Well, and I think you're right that very often it has to be women who initiate the conversations. You know, before you even, well, maybe when you're in bed already, but before you get to the point of intercourse, you'd say, so, you know, this is not how I come. And her partner needs to check out with her how she comes, you know. I mean, it's such a killer for a relationship if the guy is trying to make her come. It's, you know, or even for two women together, if either one of the partners is trying to make the other one come, it's, the relationship is probably dead before it's started, you know.
Before it's even started, yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I do, one of the things that I do, I do workshops on sex around this book, workshops on orgasm. But my whole intention really is to encourage people to talk about sex. And it's a little frightening to me how often women have said exactly that the worst thing about any new or any potential partner is whether he's going to try and make it come, because she knows that if he's going to try and make it come, forget it. I mean, you can't come when you're under pressure like that. Doesn't work. Well,
yes, and that is actually, now I want to read something, speaking of pressure, or maybe envy, but you start your book off with a beautiful quote. I don't know whose it is, perhaps it's yours. But it says, I can lose myself completely in a powerful orgasm. It's like being ripped out from inside. It's like planets colliding. Yes, the Earth moves, but not before the Milky Way dissolves. That's very powerful stuff. Is that you? Is that
no.
The orgasm?
No, but that's very interesting. The woman who said that is actually now a Buddhist nun. She's a Buddhist. And one of the very interesting things is, there's a quote later from her in the book where she talks about being in deep meditation and having an orgasm in a room full of people, just doing absolutely nothing, just sitting there in meditation and having an orgasm. And she says, I hope nobody notices. She says, I try to keep it under control. But that's absolutely fascinating because, you know, that she can get to that place through deep meditation, the same place as, you know, so many others of us get through orgasm. That's very interesting.
I personally think that it's... I don't think it's particularly shocking. I think it's, what's sad is that our society, our culture, our dominant paradigm is really separated. This is spiritual, this is sexual. And those divisions are very inane. They have very little to do with reality.
Oh, inane is the right word, yes.
Yes.
Well,
the ancients knew that sex was a doorway to the divine.
Yeah.
And this is just one of many ways to get there. And you know, I don't know if you've had a five-breath orgasm. I have, and certainly... that doesn't require any stimulation of the genitals whatsoever. You just simply breathe and contract your PC muscles so that you end up having an amazing orgasm that just shoots out the base of your spine, out the top of your head, and bypasses your genitals completely. And so there's so many ways to have orgasms. I think that frightens people. You know, you can have orgasms during childbirth. You can have orgasms while breastfeeding. This frightens people.
Yes, and babies have orgasms.
Yes,
I mean, yes,
and they can have they can have orgasms in the womb before they've ever been born.
And I think you're right. People are frightened of the power of orgasm, and they're frightened of the power of sex because it can take them over and take them out of the, you know, out of the rational brain, out of the arena of the rational brain. The rational brain, the intellect, have no power over it. They can't stop it.
Well, and, you know, actually, to tell you the truth now, so I come from a family that is very ultra-right-wing conservative Christian. Mm. And some of the things that are suspect for very, you know, very conservative religion sometimes is spirituality. My mother would often, you know, she was reticent to light candles because she associated that with spirituality. She didn't want to meditate because she associated that with spirituality. So I do think the idea of even communicating with the divine on your own terms instead of having a priest, you know, mediate for you. All of that, finding your own voice, your own truth, your own path, and being truly alive, fully connected to your experience, that is not only a frightening thing for people who haven't experienced it before, but I think it turns the dominant culture upside down.
It does. And, I mean, you know, the reason that we have priests, well, I don't have priests, but the reason there are priests in all the major religions is because it's a way of controlling people. And the reason that sex is taboo in all the major religions is because they don't want people finding out that sex is this incredible source of power that anybody can tap into. They want, because then nobody will need the priests, which is true. We don't need the priests.
Yes, I know. Yeah. It's true. It's true.
Yeah.
Now, you know, turning to this whole idea of women faking orgasms and feeling pressure to have orgasms, I noticed on page 110 of your book, you say, letting go of what other people think is the single most important thing you can do to improve the quality of your life in general and your sex life in particular. And then on page 111, you see, the importance placed on orgasm can be very distressing for women who don't have them. The underlying assumption that a woman is somehow lacking or defective if she doesn't climax can have a very negative effect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. I feel very strongly, actually, that when, you know, someone, well, a few people who have had orgasms since they were very young have said things to me like, well, what do women do who don't have orgasms? They must go around in a state of sexual excitement all the time, you know. And I'm like, of course they don't, you know. It's like the body's not stupid. If you get into a state of sexual excitement and don't have an orgasm, you'll find some other way of releasing the energy, you know. And there are plenty of women who have great sex without having anything that they can label an orgasm. I mean, you know, I think there would be 20 different words for orgasm if we talked about sex anything like as much as I think we should. there's so many different ways of climaxing, and some of them don't match up to what we think we ought to be having. But that's just, it's nonsense. I mean, what we ought to be having, I mean, there's something wrong with that whole phrase when it comes to sex. There are no oughts and shoulds around sex. And if you've got them, the best thing you can do for yourself is to let go of them.
I think that, absolutely. There's another quote in your book that says, believe me, deep breathing and relaxation can do wonders for your sex life. The whole idea of letting go, and I mean, this is our larger metaphor for life in general, really, is just, and it's kind of one of the ironies, right? Because the idea is that we're not allowed to get information and access to the divine on our own, because that would give us control and connection of our own. But in order to access that, you actually have to let go.
Yes.
You have to let go of control in order to gain control.
Yes, exactly. And we, you know, this world has run on the model of rational brain, intellect, and intellectual control for centuries, and actually, it doesn't work. Actually doesn't work. It's so small, that kind of control. It's so limited. And what we're talking about controlling, you know, the universal energy moving through us, I mean, the power of being alive, it's beyond being able to be controlled by the rational brain. And what we need to learn to do is to trust the body, because the body is an incredible source of wisdom. The body knows what it needs and what to do. And when we have an orgasm, what we have to do is to let go and let the body take over. And the body knows what to do. And one of the interesting things is that, you know, an orgasm can shake you from the inside out. And sometimes the woman's not ready for that. And her body will know when she's ready for it, and will know if she's not ready for it. And it won't go there until everything is in alignment and everything's ready to go to that incredible place. And that
I really think that a lot of women are not experiencing vaginal orgasms because they're not even truly aroused before they've achieved penetration. Okay. So much of our sexual culture seems to be predicated upon meeting and rising towards male sexual arousal and male sexual fulfillment. And as reflected in our pornified culture, which is so much about, you know, the idea that the man is going to be inside of this woman for a very brief period of time and then probably ejaculate on her face or on her back or something. Mm-hmm. And foreplay is completely knocked out of the picture. It's frightening to me how many women are engaging in sexual intercourse without the proper amount of foreplay. And I love what, I don't know what you think about this, but Sherry Winston in her book, Anatomy of Female Arousal, talks a lot about the vestibular bulbs and rousing the part of the vulva that becomes puffy on the exterior. And that until you've achieved a level of engorgement on the exterior and just below the surface, which is where the vestibular bulbs are, that you're really not ready for penetration.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of women are trying very hard to emulate what they've seen in the pornographic films and to keep pace with their boyfriends and husbands.
Yes. I absolutely agree. And, I mean, we just need to learn how to do sex differently. And men need to learn to be more aware of what it actually feels like when a woman is really aroused. And women need to learn to say, no, I'm not ready yet, when they're not ready. And if that means they don't have intercourse, they don't have intercourse that night, they don't have intercourse next night, they don't have intercourse for a year, then that's what it means. But having intercourse when you're not ready for it is not, it's really just not okay. It's never going to lead to a fulfilling relationship, sexual or otherwise, actually. I mean, women have to learn to say no. And they have to learn to get to know their own bodies and trust themselves in order to be able to do that. And I know that it's difficult. It takes a lot of courage to do that, because who can you talk to who's going to be supportive? You know, a lot of women don't have anybody to talk to. And, you know, it's certainly on the cards that a husband or boyfriend is going to get annoyed. But the truth is, women have got to learn to say no.
And speaking of learning, I see on page 108, you've got learning to come. And you say an orgasm does not usually arise abruptly out of nowhere. The process of facilitating the buildup of tension that most of us require before we can let go into orgasm often has to be learned. It is a matter of focusing the energy, engaging your brain in a repetitive activity can help. Some women find counting down is particularly effective, but it doesn't have to involve numbers. And one thing is definite, although women do masturbate without having orgasms, most women are far more likely to come while masturbating than with a partner. Mm-hmm. Other women simply cannot achieve orgasm without the special kind of stimulation supplied by a vibrator, and often only a very particular kind will do. Vibrators are not the answer for everyone, however, and using a vibrator may keep a woman from learning to love herself, because if a vibrator, she doesn't have to touch herself, she can distance herself from her body, and thus prevent herself from being fully involved in sexual play. What do you think that is about, where a woman would rather mediate her orgasm with a piece of machinery than actually touch herself?
Oh, I think that we're taught that, you know, down there is disgusting. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, I certainly was punished for masturbating as a kid. And, you know, I think an enormous, well, especially anybody who was raised Catholic, believes that it's wrong to touch themselves down there. And, you know, it's just not so very long ago, like my mother's generation, really. My mother's generation. I'm 60 now. My mother's generation, you know, women were still being told, especially in places like Ireland, that, you know, just close your eyes and think of Jesus and let your husband get on with it.
That's sad that was that recently. Yes.
And because we don't talk about these things, it takes many generations to actually change those deep-seated beliefs. You know, it's very deep-seated. And it's also true to say that in the known history of the world, sex has been used to threaten women from, you know, not just in wars, but, I mean, it was legal for a man to rape his wife in most parts of Europe until, I think it only changed in the 80s in some parts of Europe. I'm not sure about here, but certainly.
That's very true.
And if she didn't, if she didn't knuckle down, if she didn't do what she was supposed to do, then he'd just force her. And that was okay. That was considered okay. I mean, that is so recent in our history. So, you know, I think women have, you know, you can look at history, you can really see why women are not standing up for themselves. But I just want to say to all the women out there, it's time. Claim your own power. You have the right to say no, and you have the right to say yes. Find out what your body wants and go for it, and don't take anything less.
I often tell my clients that if you don't have a firm no, if you don't have a no, then your yes is meaningless.
But yes, exactly.
Yeah. Your yes doesn't mean a lot unless you've got a no in there somewhere.
Right.
You know, there's lots of mechanics to women, and women have heard an awful lot about the G-spot, and you've got some great quotes in here from women who share what they find about their G-spot, and I want to read a couple of them, and then hoping maybe you can kind of clear up some of the confusion about G-spots, but here's what some of the women in your book have to say on page 181. It's rough and bumpy. The skin on it is like a strawberry with pits and bumps. My G-spot feels like gills. It feels a little bit different from the rest of my vagina. It has ridges. It's bigger than an almond, more like a Brazil nut. My G-spot is about 2 knuckles long and 1 knuckle wide, and it feels like a rough sponge covered with little pockets. I've never really tried to find it, but it isn't an immediately apparent feature of my body, and even after some years of sexual activity, it appears I haven't found it. And I have no experience of a so-called G-spot and no interest in it either. These are different responses from different women that you quote in your book. So what about that? I mean, I know you also quote Deborah Sundahl, a friend and colleague of mine, who came out with the groundbreaking video about 20 years ago called How to Female Ejaculate.
Yeah.
And do you think all women have a G-spot? Do you think the G-spot exists?
Oh, I do think it exists. But I also think that, if you look at women's hands, they have incredibly different hands. And I think our vaginas, our sexual organs, are exactly the same. They can be incredibly different. So, and we get aroused in very different ways, and our body responds differently as we get aroused. And, you know, there's so many different ways of getting aroused, and if there's a particular method that a woman actually never tries, then perhaps that's the one method that would get her G-spot aroused. But, you know, she may be having wonderful sex doing hundreds of other things. So, you know, maybe she just isn't bothered about it. And I will say for myself, it was the result of women lovers who used their fingers a lot inside my vagina that helped me to get in touch with where my G-spot was. And a lot of the women I interviewed for this book said the similar thing, that they didn't discover they had a G-spot when they were only having intercourse with, a penis. And that's partly because a penis is straight, and it actually doesn't hit the G-spot as well, especially if the woman's underneath and face up.
Just for the record, there are different... I mean, some penises are straight, some of them bend down, some of them bend up. But anyway,
I
hear you.
Yeah. But the fingers bend up, and they do really easily get to the G-spot. So a woman is more likely, if she's being aroused digitally, she's more likely to know where her G-spot is than if she's only having intercourse with someone using a penis. I've said that a little oddly, but you know what I mean. So anyway, I think that that's a big factor. Some women just, perhaps it's just not a big feature on their sexual landscape, But I do believe that, it actually perhaps is not true to say this, but I was going to say I believe that anyone can find their G-spot if they want to. And having found it, of course, they may actually not really enjoy having it touched. I mean, there was at least one woman I interviewed who said it made her feel really uncomfortable. It made her feel like she was going to urinate. And so she didn't like having it stimulated. So,
Right. Yeah. I've heard that before, too. And oftentimes I try to encourage women, go ahead and urinate. What's so bad about that?
Yes, well, exactly, yes. And then the feeling of ejaculating is similar to the feeling of urination, so it could actually be just that she's getting ready to ejaculate. And, that is one of the things that motivated me to write that book, is because I had met a number of women, I would say, at least six different women who ejaculate and had ejaculated all their lives, but were, especially with new lovers, were embarrassed and ashamed by it, and so deliberately prevented themselves from doing it. And that, to me, is just really sad. And that arises from ignorance, because it's not a generally known thing. I mean, there's still plenty of doctors in the world who will tell you that women don't ejaculate. That's just ignorance. I mean, they haven't been exposed to it, so they don't know. But,
you've got a fabulous chapter in here, chapter 4, The Energetic Experience of Orgasm, Non-Physical Components of Orgasm. And I love some of the stories in here. They're just great. The best orgasm ever was when I was sleeping out on a deck with my lover, and we woke up just before dawn and started to make love. Then a flock of yellow birds flew down toward us, and we both came together just as the first of the sun's rays touched us. I felt out of my skin.
Yeah.
Just lovely. Here's another one. The feeling runs away by itself, and my mind focuses in on itself, and I'm going, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. I'm sitting there having an orgasm, hoping no one notices. It's amazing how strong the feeling gets.
Mm-hmm.
And here was this woman named Laura. She had her first ever orgasm watching a horse race. No one was touching her, nor was she touching herself, and she wasn't even thinking about sex. And she said, the beauty and vitality and competitive spirit of the horses just took me to orgasm.
Mm-hmm. Now, Laura's a very interesting woman because she actually, I believe from interviewing her, she's never had what we would call a clitoral orgasm. She only has ever had ejaculatory orgasms, which, we might label as vaginal orgasms. And that's what occurred when she was watching the horses. I mean, she wasn't being stimulated in any way. But she doesn't like having a clitoris touched, and she never does it herself. But she has great sex. And what she calls an orgasm is, I don't know if, I mean, that was one of the very interesting things that I discovered, is that a vaginal orgasm is not always synonymous with ejaculation, even when we're talking about somebody who ejaculates regularly. It would be very interesting to do more research, just talk with more different women, because I did get some very different feedback about ejaculation and what it was for different women.
Well, as with both men and women are able to ejaculate actually without even experiencing an orgasm, they can orgasm without ejaculating. So those two processes can be separate. They can also come together simultaneously. So that both a man or a woman is capable of ejaculating and having an orgasm. And sometimes people conflate those, but they are also bodily functions that can, happen independent of each other.
Mm-hmm.
There are vaginal orgasms that have no connection to an ejaculation whatever, because they're really about the contraction of the cervix, mm-hmm. and contraction of the vaginal walls. Orgasm's got a lot of different depths and experience to it. And I love the way this one woman describes getting off. She says, one night I was lying on my bed with the window open. It was warm, and a delightful, sensuous breeze was wafting over me. I opened my legs to it and felt as if it was actually caressing me. I stayed with the feeling until I came. I mean, isn't that lovely? One of the things that I really get from reading a lot of these women's commentaries is just how they're embracing sensuality and ecstasy. So the woman who's watching the horses, she's feeling ecstasy their competitive spirit, their beauty, their vitality. And, let's face it, horses really are erotic.
They're
beautiful creatures. I think it's one of the reasons almost every little girl wants to have a horse. They really are just gorgeous, and very virile. And they communicate sex, and every move they make seems to be quite erotic.
Yes, but, and sensual, and all those words apply.
So you've also, the next section here in the energetic experience of orgasm, you talk about a psychic connection.
Mm-hmm.
And here's one person's quote. I have an occasional lover who brings me to orgasm in a way no one else ever has. He is an accomplished lover, and my attraction to him as a person is so chemically, spiritually, obsessively intense that I can't tell what influences what. Can you say more about that? When you say psychic connection, are people able to give each other orgasms remotely, or are you just saying they're in love? I'm not real clear on that.
Well, there's one woman I spoke with actually quite recently, long after I'd written the book, who said to me that when she was very young, she had orgasms from when she first remembered. And she said that when she had an orgasm, she knew God. That's how she put it. She said, I knew God. And so I said to her, well, what do you mean by that? And she said, well, I would know things. I would know that I should go to a certain place. I'd know that I should avoid a certain person, and I should get to know another person. And I'd know that someone I knew, a certain person was sick, she said. So as I said when we started this conversation, sex starts with the body and then takes us to some totally other realm. I mean, vaster realm. Vast is the word that comes to me. It expands us. It expands our awareness. And so it can take us to places where we have awarenesses of specific things, or of beauty, or love, if you like. that we can't access in our, or we don't access in our normal daily lives or normal daily routines. And so that's, you know, that word psychic is tricky, really, but an expanded awareness is probably a better way of putting it. And an awful lot of women talked about having what I would label as an expanded awareness when they had an orgasm. Does that make more sense than the word psychic?
Well, yeah, I think you're talking about kind of opening a door to awareness there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I, you know, one of the things that I was thinking of too, however, is that since, you know, we're talking about the energetic experience of orgasm, that sometimes, and you're also referencing women who sometimes really experience sex as this fulfilling, wonderful thing, but they're not real sure if they had an orgasm per mm-hmm. se.
Yes.
And one of the things that I think is possible that I've observed is that sometimes lovers can be so in tune with each other that if one partner has an orgasmic experience, one that's readily identified as orgasm, that can sometimes actually seem to communicate an energetic orgasm with their partner.
Yes.
So that there can almost be this confusion, like which one of us came.
Right. Right.
Was that you or was that me?
Yes. And there's no need to find an answer to that. Just accept that these mm-hmm. these things can happen. Yes, and I really want to stress that the possibilities, the potential of what sex can, you know, that expanded awareness that we can come to, the expanded intimacy, the expanded connection, the potential for those is really unlimited, and they're also individual. And I also want to say that a lot of people, well, and particularly women, I think, tend to assume that they can really only have really, 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 really wonderful sex with somebody whom they're deeply in love with and will spend the rest of their lives with. And that actually is not true. For a lot of us, it's possible to have incredible depths of intimacy with someone whom we perhaps don't even know very well.
Uh-huh.
And that's fine. That is absolutely fine. The possibilities, you know, sometimes when you spend your life with someone, the daily stuff gets in the way. And sometimes you can connect more easily with somebody where you don't, all that daily stuff isn't there getting in the way. And you can go
yeah.
to different places and deeper places, just other places. It's not that one is better than the other. I mean, you may very well want to decide to spend your life with someone whom you're compatible with on a daily level and maybe you have kids with and so on. And that may not be the person that you have that really, really incredible sex with, and that's fine. There is no reason why we can't have more than one intimate relationship, and all intimate relationships are different. They're all unique, and we get different things from all of them.
Mm. Oh, yeah. So now are you advocating for polyamory there?
I am, but I'm also, let me also say that I know it doesn't work for some people, and it doesn't have to work for you. If it doesn't work for you, that's fine. It doesn't work for you. But I am advocating more openness, really, more openness to different possibilities and different people. And, you know, there's a whole world of incredible people out here.
Yes. Well, and well, you know, I'm looking at the clock here, and I can't believe we've got about 5 minutes left. But I want to make sure people know how to get a hold of your book, and then also, are you still leading shamanic journeys?
Yes, I, you know, because I travel so much, it depends where I am. But when I'm in the San Francisco Bay Area, I always lead regular shamanic journeys. And, you know, as I said initially, I think sex is an extremely shamanic activity. But shamanism, the word shamanism or shamanic, it's really a huge label that covers a lot of experiences. But most basically, I would say it's about learning to work and play with the energy that is around us all the time and to tune into that and allow it to flow through us. Mm. So that's really why I think the shamanic journeys are so useful. But my website has, well, I try to keep my website updated. And if I'm doing, you know, if I'm doing a shamanic journey, I try to make sure I put it on my website in a timely way.
Yes.
What is
your website?
www.mikayahart.org. You have to remember the org. It's not .com.
.org. And spell your name for our listeners.
MIKAYAHEART.
Fabulous. Fabulous. Yeah. So they can actually go on some shamanic journeys with you. The book, again, is The Ultimate Guide to Orgasm for Women. And it is available through Clias Press. Would you recommend that they go to Clias Press website or Amazon or your website?
You know, it's really debatable because if you buy it from Amazon, I mean, of course, one can say all kinds of bad things about Amazon, but if you buy it from Amazon, then Amazon order more books in and then more people, you know, more people are likely to buy them. And on the other hand, it's lovely to support your local bookstore if you're willing to do that. And on the other hand, you can order it from the Clias website, and it's also available as an e-book, so your choices are huge.
Just huge, yes. Well, that's kind of how books have to be nowadays. Yeah, totally.
And let me just say one thing. I'm going to be in the UK in September, and I'll probably be doing a couple of workshops on orgasm. And a lot of the most important thing about when I do a workshop on orgasm is to encourage people to talk about their experiences and so that, you know, have different people share.
I think that's the strong point of your book, actually, is to have, how did you get the people, did you do a survey, online survey, or?
I put out a questionnaire, and so a lot of the answers are from the questionnaire, and I also interviewed every single person I knew who was willing to talk to me, so that was probably about 25. And they're really in-depth interviews. And I specifically went out of my way to talk to a couple of women whom I knew, just because I'd known them for years, that had difficulty having orgasm. And because, you know, I think there's an enormous number of women who have difficulty with sex in various ways and won't talk about it, understandably. And I felt it was really important to represent that, what may even be a majority, but appears to be a very small minority, only because they're the ones who won't talk.
Oh, I think that when you talk about, I mean, if we're talking about women that are anorgasmic, not actually having orgasms at all, then that would be a smaller percentage. But if you're talking about women who have difficulty around sex, I think it's definitely
huge.
The majority.
Yes.
There's so much sexual abuse, and you don't have to be an incest survivor. You don't even have to be a date rape survivor, although those two populations certainly would create a large percentage of women who have had some kind of trauma sexually. But just being subjected to the culture where women's sexual license and individuality and empowerment and pleasure are suspect is in and of itself a form of sexual abuse that all women have to recover from.
Yes, yes. It requires courage to step into your power when you've got that kind of background, and as most of us do, well, or perhaps...
Well, and that's exactly what you've done. You've stepped into your power and healed your own sexual abuse history. Mm-hmm. And can I ask you?
Yes.
Are you fully orgasmic at this point?
Yes. Yes. I I'm not somebody who comes very easily. I prefer to use a vibrator. But I've had all kinds of, well, a number of incredibly different orgasms. And I've had the most amazing, I've had some truly incredible sexual relationships. I started traveling about 8 years ago. And since then, I haven't had a regular lover. But I, for a couple of, well, let me see, in the 90s, I had some lovers who were truly extraordinary and really, really, really helped me to fully embrace my sexuality. And that was an incredible gift, which I will always be very, very grateful for. And I also know that, you know, I can slip back into that place whenever I want. And that's wonderful. That's truly wonderful. I'm amazed, really, that I've been able to do this, to be able to be like this. It's amazing to me. What a gift. What an incredible thing.
Yeah. Well, and that is a gift to your readers as well, mm-hmm. Gaia.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, nobody really is going to get a lot from the story of somebody who's had it all together from the beginning. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What I think benefits all of us is hearing about people's journeys of recovery and reclamation. That gives everybody else the strength, the encouragement, and the inspiration to do the same.
Yes. Recovery and reclamation.
And we are unfortunately out of time. Mm-hmm. But once again, my guest tonight has been Nikaya Hart, and her book is The Ultimate Guide to Orgasm for Women. And it's just a delightful book. I hope you'll get yourself a copy of it. Next week, I will be interviewing Carol Brody Fleet, and we're going to be talking about Happily Even After. It's really going to be about how you can put your life together after losing a partner. So Carol Brody Fleet is the author of Widows Wear Stilettos. It should be an interesting interview next Monday. Thanks so much for tuning in tonight, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with you. Sering kesepian, kenapa tak mentus kabar berita?